The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Third and final hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Great to be with you this morning, as always. And I want to shift gears here to a separate topic from, you know, we were talking about Tay. We were talking about earlier Tay Anderson on the Denver School Board. We were talking about Trump and the indictments there. We'll get back to these discussions. You can call in the next segment at 303-696-1971. But I want to go into Taiwan and the developments from Taiwan, where President Tsai Ing-wen has had a meeting, I think yesterday, if I recall correctly, with Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat leader of the House in New York City. Now, that is, as their government says, in transit, a meeting in transit to Central America to meet with some governments there, and then on up to Los Angeles in transit back to Taiwan. And the president is expected to have a sit down with Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House. So on the East Coast, you have a meeting with the Democrat leader of the House. On the West Coast, you have a meeting with the Republican leader of the House, who's also the Speaker of the House. And of course, this comes several months after last August, a good chunk of months, but after last August's visit from then Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan that caused a lot of consternation and saber rattling from the Chinese Communist Party then. And then, of course, a couple months after that, I end up going to Taiwan amidst all the saber rattling and tension, leaving the country for the very first time. Taiwan was the first place I ever visited outside the continental U.S. as part of an international press tour. It was an incredible experience. And I have to tell you, from that experience, I really got to see firsthand how free and democratic and free market as well Taiwan is. It is known as like the pinnacle of democracy in Asia. And it's incredible. And then one of the sad things to me is that only 13 countries in the world, I believe, formally recognize Taiwan as a sovereign country, because the Chinese Communist Party claims a one China policy, which most of the world has adopted, including the United States, at least officially, where China stakes claim to Taiwan. And that is the reason why, ostensibly anyway, you have a lot of saber rattling, all these tensions from the Chinese Communist Party amidst the transit meetings being done now by President Tsai Ing-wen. As President Tsai visits the United States, we're pleased to be, I guess not technically visits, they use the word transit. As she transits through and meets with some of our leaders, I am very pleased to welcome back to the program the Director General of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office in Denver, which officially and formally represents Taiwan, the equivalent to a consulate if we had formal diplomatic relations. Bill Huang rejoins me on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Good morning, Bill. Welcome back to 710 KNUS.
Good morning, Jimmy. Thank you for having me.
It's always great to speak with you and get your insights. And I want to just, for context, very briefly, and I know we could do a whole show on the history of Taiwan and China and China's claim over Taiwan as mainland China and so forth. I want to give a quick little primer for context as to why China, at least ostensibly, gets so upset over these kinds of meetings like President Tsai did last year with Pelosi, this year now doing with Jeffries and McCarthy. Can you just give us the very short bio, so to speak, of Taiwan relative to China, and also about what this meaning is of status quo, as is talked about. We just want to maintain the status quo.
Well, first of all, I just want to say the Chinese are always upset, always have consternation when Taiwan and the United States are doing something right. And let me emphasize, this is not the first time that President Tsai has made a transit in the United States. In fact, this is the seventh time already, and you wonder why would they make such a fuss about it. I'll just have to say that whenever they have big problems domestically, or they have sour relations with the outside world, they always try to find someone to kick around. And in this case, there's no better option for them than Taiwan. So, well, we can anticipate their upset. They are upset, and we can anticipate their consternations. But, we still have to do the right thing. President Tsai is visiting our diplomatic ally countries in Central Asia. And she, because of the convenience and safety of the trip, has to make transits in the United States. So I don't see anything wrong about that. And no one would expect the Chinese to agree with whatever Taiwan is doing right now.
I know one of her transits several years back, she stopped through Colorado, actually, and went to the Fort restaurant, for example. and that was a very big moment. Bill Huang, China claims that certainly the Chinese Communist Party ruling in China claims that Taiwan is part of China. Why?
Oh, I have to say, never in one day has the Chinese stepped their foot on the island of China. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party. So what about the claim that they own Taiwan? It's a false claim that they kept saying to the outside world, which no one, really taken so seriously. Just to cite an example, you travel to Taiwan and you wanted, a visa for Taiwan, where do you go to? You come to our office, you don't go to the Chinese Consulate General. That tells you that, we are two separate political entities. So their claim that they own Taiwan is ridiculous.
Well, and let me be clear about one of my observations from spending time in your country, and I will clearly say country, is that, first of all, it is the 21st largest economy in the globe. And second of all, the way that you conduct affairs internally and also in terms of, as you talked about, diplomatic relations or exchanges with other countries, I mean, it is so transparent that you're running your own affairs, a democratic country, making your decisions, the way in which people were living their lives and smiling and just so polite, but also being free, being their own country, doing their things. I witnessed a free market in action. I witnessed liberty in action, especially because I was there for your National Day celebrations, which are massive and tremendous shows of patriotism.
That's right. That's right. So actually, if you look around Asia, you really can't find any country more democratic or more free than in the case of Taiwan. And we directly elect our own president. So, the legitimacy for the government is not through any, outside influence or through any, dictatorship, It's a full-fledged democracy, and we respect the will of the people. And the government makes decision according to the will of the people. So really, you cannot find a freer and more democratic country in the world. And the fact, because we are the number 21 largest economy of the world, and our key role in global supply chain renders almost like, economically, the status of G20. In fact, without any political interference, we should be part of the G20.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, you're looking at the scale of the economy in that small island, which is the size of what, like Rhode Island and Delaware combined. It's tiny, but packs a punch economically and in terms of population and more. You know, one thing I really want to talk with you about, Bill Huang, our guest, Director General of Taiwan's office in Denver, is the relationship between the United States and Taiwan. I remember especially Joseph Wu, your foreign minister. We had an opportunity on my trip to do a Q&A with him for an hour, and I got a good detailed response when I asked him about the significance of the security relationship between the U.S. and Taiwan. What can you tell us about that, especially vis-a-vis the transit of President Tsai Ing-wen through the United States and visiting with Hakeem Jeffries and Speaker Kevin McCarthy, and what that shows and why the American people should care about Taiwan's freedom, independence, and the relationship that we have, even if informal, between our two countries?
Yes. First of all, I don't think I can comment on what you say about the meeting with Speaker McCarthy, because that hasn't happened yet. It hasn't been confirmed officially by our government.
It's anticipated, at least. Fair enough.
Yeah. If it happens, then I'll comment on it. Secondly, I want to say that, you know, the security relations between Taiwan and the United States couldn't have been better now. And twofold. One is that, you know, for 70 years, we've been preparing for any kind of eventuality by the Chinese, because you never expect what they are going to do. And so we are fully prepared for it. But still, in the long run, we need partners. We need international liberal democracy order, you know, to be in place and come to Taiwan's assistance when needs be. So that way, we have been building up this security relation with the United States. But from another angle, actually, the world, especially the liberal democracies, need Taiwan. Because you just look at the fact, 60% of the sea line of communication is through Taiwan Strait or around Taiwan. And we are talking about 40% of the air traffic going through that part of the world. So, and not to mention Taiwan's importance in those global supply chains like semiconductors. So anything happens to Taiwan will have a ripple effect, huge one I'm talking about, you know, across the world. The Americans, even the Chinese, the Europeans, all will be infected. So in that sense, a more intensified and more coordinated security, you know, partnership between Taiwan and the United States, and also with liberal democratic countries like Japan or Europe, hasn't been more important than now.
I understand, Bill Huang, that you can't talk about a meeting with Speaker McCarthy because that has not happened yet. But if it does, or even that aside, one thing that we are seeing here is the bipartisan nature of U.S. leaders understanding and showing that, reflecting that understanding of the significance of the security relationship here. I remember in his response to my question, Foreign Minister Wu really highlighted that and said, we have resounded. There's probably no other issue that brings Republicans and Democrats together so closely. I would say maybe overall the Israel and the very close relationship between the U.S. and Israel would be comparable. But he was making the point, I think, very apt about just how significant that relationship is in terms of bipartisan nature.
Yes, we really appreciate the bipartisan support by the United States, especially in the Congress. And we think that we deserve that kind of support. Because as I said, for 70 more years, we have been at the forefront of a liberal democratic world order, you know, fencing off all those aggressions from authoritarian regimes. And we'll continue to build this bipartisan support in the United States by intensifying our commercial investment and also our cultural and technological relations with the United States. So we are friends and we share a common values of democracy, liberty, and respect for human rights. But even more than that, we are very eager to build mutually beneficial relations between the United States and allow our relations to go even more steps further.
The Chinese Communist Party, just a few minutes left with our guest, Bill Huang, who represents the Taiwanese government here in the Denver region. The Taiwanese government certainly is alert to anything that the Chinese do, the Chinese government does. And of course, there's a lot of saber rattling right now in terms of retaliation that could happen, especially if there is a meeting between President Tsai and Speaker McCarthy. My question to you in this regard is, do you have any sense for what the Chinese Communist Party might want to do this time as retaliation? And what do the Taiwanese people think about that prospect, especially because this is nothing new? You've been dealing with this stuff for, what, 70 years?
Mm-hmm. Yes. 73 years, actually. Yeah. Yes. Let me just say that, first of all, you know, really, it is very hard to anticipate what the Chinese Communist regime and Xi Jinping can do, you know. In a sense, dictators, they are prone to misjudge situations because, first, they are biased, and secondly, there's no one to talk sense to them. That happened in the case when Russia invaded Ukraine. And so I think it's going to be the same case with China when dealing with Taiwan and the rest of the world. But I can only say that the intentions is going to be even more intensified. So Taiwan has to prepare for it. But as to what measures they are going to go, you know, really, it is, I'm not in a position to make a full opportunity.
We have talked about this before on a few different occasions on my program, Bill, but we had a listener, Chuck, just call in, posing a question in regards to Ukraine and how closely both the Chinese Communist Party and the Taiwanese government are watching what's happened in Ukraine. I mean, if you look at it, we are now over a year into this war, and very few people thought that Ukraine would stick through it. But two things have shown up. Number one, the resolve of the Ukrainian people is something that's well beyond anything Russia or other parts of the world anticipated. And number two, the international community has resoundingly rallied behind the Ukrainian people. I've always surmised that that sends, both of those things send a message to China. What do you think?
Yes. Let me just make it clear. Taiwan is not Ukraine. In terms of Taiwan's economic importance and its strategic position in the Western Pacific, that's for sure. But having said that, I'll have to say both China and Taiwan and the U.S. is watching the situation in Ukraine closely. Let me just say, if the situation in Ukraine has been the reverse instead of what you just described now, I think China might have already done something stupid against Taiwan already, because they are watching every step of what happens in Russia and try to adjust their strategy towards Taiwan accordingly. But then again, Taiwan was also watching the way Ukraine resists those aggressions and try to learn some lessons from them. And I'll just have to emphasize again, Taiwan is not Ukraine in the sense that, you know, of course, we sympathize with their cause, but we have been preparing for, you know, any hostilities from China for over seven decades. And I told you before, both my father and I served in offshore island of Kinmen and trying to resist, you know, the aggressions from China. And that happens to almost every grown man in Taiwan. So we know what it is all about to be facing a strong and aggressive enemy. And we know that we have to be ready and prepare ourselves, you know, for the aggression.
Sure. Well, just one final thing. I got about 30 seconds for you, Bill. But one observation that I had is while the Taiwanese people are consistently and readily available or recognizing anything can happen at any moment, when I was there, you were living your lives. You were your people were living their lives. They were celebrating their national day. It was like you know, it's sort of, we're used to this. Chinese are always saber rattling the Chinese government, and we're living our lives, and we're going to keep living our lives, and they're not going to deter us. And by the way, that to me reinforced your point that the Taiwanese people are ready to defend yourselves, because you have lived as a free country for, especially since the dictatorship ended, I think, in the late 80s, for decades now, and independently for 70 plus years.
Yeah. You've been to Taiwan, so you know what Taiwanese are, a happy bunch. And we know that there are some aggressive guys out there. But life goes on. We have to develop our economy. We have to live our life as usual, but fully aware that, you know, when something wrong happens, we have to gear up for it, and we are ready for it. Well, that's what I'll have to say, you know, when dealing with China, you know.
Bill Huang, Director General of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office. Really appreciate your time this morning, sir. Thank you so much for breaking some of these things down. And I wish your president safe travels in transit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, Bill Huang, representing the Taiwanese government, joining us here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. And always appreciate Bill's insights here on the program. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back on the other side. Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Any thoughts on Taiwan, Tay, Trump? It's a team warning. 303-696-1971. Keep it right here. Rocking and rolling back. Jimmy Sengenberger here with you. It's the legendary John Mayall with, listen to this. All of 27 years old, it's the incredible Marcus King joining the legendary John Mayall of Blues Baker's fame. One of the mentors of Eric Clapton, by the way, who's coming to Ball Arena on September 16th. It's part of a limited North American tour. But Marcus King, I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And honestly, in some ways, his look and his tone sound like someone I've seen him on video play with, Warren Haynes of Government Mule. And Warren is just incredible. Also, one of the greatest guitar players alive today, bar none. Of course, Government Mule is playing at Red Rocks on August 7th. As a listener texted me, it's not Dark Side of the Moon in its entirety, Jimmy. I said that. They're covering. It's an event called Dark Side of the Mule. So he says, it's Dark Side of the Mule. Don't lie to your listeners. Yeah, I guess I should clarify and not just say, but they're covering the entirety of the Dark Side of the Moon album. Listener texted in earlier when we were talking about my Jimmy Jr. Blues Band opening for Government Mule at Red Rocks. We had Ken Cornell, my bass player, on in the beginning of the bottom of the last hour. It was just an absolute blast. I appreciate the listener texts, and we got a calls coming in. Congrats, Jimmy. Red Rocks is a huge gig. So about that whole, it's the Dark Side of the Mule and its moon. And it's not the Dark Side of the Moon in its entirety, Jimmy. It's Dark Side of the Mule, don't lie to your listeners thing. Yeah, April Fools. Unfortunately, we are not actually playing Red Rocks. I hope that will happen. But alas, it is April 1st, and we are not playing Red Rocks yet. Down the line, I'm sure we will. Would love to open even better for Warren Haynes and Government Mule. But alas, like the promise of 40 acres and a mule that Government Mule gets its name from, it's not true. But I appreciate the enthusiastic response. If that ever happens, we'll let you know. Actually, the true thing is we're going through some band member changes and getting things sorted out and up to speed. So Jimmy Jr. Blues Band will be back in action before you know it. But alas, we will not be playing at Red Rocks. I never get April Fools. It's April 1st on a Saturday? Huh. All right, here we are on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. I loved that interview with Bill Huang. I always enjoy his insights as the representative of Taiwan here in Denver. And Bill Huang made a number of points. One of the things that we talked about was the relationship between the United States and Taiwan, even though it's not official. Because the United States officially adopts the one China policy, even though there's a much bigger understanding between us than that. Only 13 countries actually recognize Taiwan as a sovereign nation. Well, that was really on display this week at the United Nations. You see, President Tsai Ing-wen is on transit from New York to Central America to Los Angeles. Reportedly, she's going to meet with Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, this coming week. And she met, I think, yesterday with Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat leader in the House. And in New York, she could have gone to the United Nations. She could have given a speech. She could have just met with people. But no. The Taiwanese people are forbidden, any one of them, if they have a Taiwanese passport or proof of citizenship, they are forbidden from going into the United Nations because the United Nations does not recognize Taiwan and has not since the end of the 70s. With the one China policy being adopted. Well, this was something else. During the week, foreign media grilled the press secretary for the United Nations on all of that. And it's a long montage I saw online, and I was like, I got to clip this, and we got to run it. Take a listen to foreign media grilling the press secretary for the United Nations this week about Taiwan.
Secretary General is clearly seen as a champion of democratic values. President of Taiwan, Tsai Ing-wen, is in the U.S. this week, will come to New York later in the week, and is the leader of what's considered Asia's leading democracy. Does the Secretary General have any message for her?
The Secretary General's position on China is guided by the relevant General Assembly resolution on the One China policy.
But, sorry, I'm not asking about China.
No,
I'm
no,
about
I understand, Taiwan, and that's the answer. That's the answer. That's the answer to your question.
Well, yeah, that's an answer,
the
right?
Taiwanese citizens, the passport holders who are not even allowed into this building to take a tour. Does the Secretary General have anything to say to that?
The policy of the UN is that the premises of UN headquarters are open to people with identifications of member states of the UN.
Taiwan. Citizens used to be allowed into this building and they're not allowed now. How did that change?
Is that to come into this building, you need to show a government-issued ID from a member state of the United Nations.
And what's the authority for that? Was that a GGA resolution?
I don't know.
Or is it just a decision of the Secretary-General?
Let me
if you could try and find out, because also Kosovo passports. There are Kosovo passport holders, including senior Kosovo officials, who brief the Security Council. They're not members of the United Nations. How are they allowed?
But they've come also on the fact that it is an issue that's before the Security Council.
But these people are citizens of the world, and I wouldn't have thought that the Secretary General is someone who wants to practice discrimination.
For UN, Taiwan is part of China or not?
Our position on China is guided by the General Assembly resolution passed in 72, 73 on the One China policy.
Some years ago, we tried to have journalists from Taiwan here in that building, and we could not because China said no.
You're making a statement. We're here to ask questions. Is your question?
I want to know, is China running the UN?
I think this is one of the most ridiculous questions I've heard today. Okay.
Wow, that is one annoyed press secretary. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Karine Jean-Pierre when she's actually being grilled by folks in the media. But that was something else. Even complete with a sigh. The United Nations forbids Taiwanese citizens from entering the UN. And the way that he was trying to dodge and weave these questions was absurd. But notably, all foreign media, quite the questions. Quite the questions indeed. But that gives you an eye into the geopolitical environment and the relationship with Taiwan. Only 13 countries actually recognize Taiwan. I believe the first one, if I recall correctly, learned this last year when I was in Taiwan, was St. Kitts and Nevis. There was a, it's in the Caribbean, and I think they established relations with Taiwan in the 1980s. First time since the world basically accepted the one China policy. And it's it was interesting. I met a guy from, who was in, part of our international press tour, is from St. Kitts and Nevis, and that's he was one of a couple of countries that were with us that actually had relations. I think Palau, which is in the Pacific, I believe. I believe Palau is another country that recognizes, but they're small nations pretty much. But something else, and appreciated Bill Huang joining me. So here's a little update. You get a bonus hour of Jimmy Sengenberger on the radio. Peter Boyle's running a bit behind this morning, so I'm going to be covering the first hour, I believe, of his show. So stick around and don't go anywhere. You've got lots more of Jimmy Sengenberger coming up here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Final segment of my show up next. Before 9 o'clock, Jimmy Sengenberger back with you. Here's Buddy Guy with someone that a listener requested last week, British vocalist Joss Stone, doing Buddy's tune, Baby, You Got What It Takes. Great duet. When we get listener requests, I listen to what you say. Last week, someone loved Coco Taylor. You got to do another Coco Taylor tune. Buddy Guy also, I'm looking forward to it, going to see him play at Fiddler's Green on July 29th with Kenny Wayne Shepherd opening for Buddy. That's going to be awesome. Yeah, and yeah, I certainly wish it is a finale tour. It is the damn right farewell tour for Buddy Guy. Last time coming through for weeks, I was looking, checking, is he coming to Denver? And lo and behold, he's coming to Denver. And opening for him is Kenny Wayne Shepherd, who's another favorite of mine and my dad's. So I'm very much looking forward to that. A couple things as we wrap up this show, and then listener text. Bonus hour, as in filling in for Peter for the next hour because he's running behind this morning. Another April Fool's joke. No, this is true. I'm not going to do a third April 1st, April Fool's Day. On the rare occasion that April 1st falls on a Saturday. And of course, I have to play it with music. Music is such a big part of this show. Best bumper music known to man. Got to throw you for a loop in the first hour. Are we playing at Red Rocks, the Jimmy Jr. Blues Band? I wish we were opening for Government Mule. My God, that would be incredible. We aren't. Okay, that's enough. Two is enough for one rare April Fool's Day show. I am indeed covering the first hour or so for good old Mr. Boyles, the man himself. And the there was one other. Oh! I would be remiss. I don't know. My sister's not listening. I don't know if my mom's listening or not at the moment. But I want to say my sister's birthday was on the 30th. My mom's anniversary of her 29th birthday was yesterday. So happy birthday, Caitlin. And happy anniversary of your 29th birthday, Mom. I love you both so very much. Yeah, indeed. Back to back. In fact, in 1997, my sister was born on Easter Sunday, which was quite a moment, quite a day. That's for darn sure. Listener text, very happy. Last week, he said, come on, Jimmy, you got to play Joss Stone, maybe 4 and 20 hours. Or lady, especially near the end of either song where she gets so soulful. So we didn't play the end. But Mark from Freeweld County, Wyoming, Gabe Evans Land, thank you for playing Joss. He texts me now. As soon as I heard her, I laughed and smiled all the way through. I am glad to provide you with a little smile, especially after some of the consternation I probably threw at listeners this morning. Happy to do it. We take requests if they are good. And yes, you can't go wrong with Joss Stone. Great request, especially when she's with Buddy Guy. And I appreciate the text from Alexa. Awesome if we do get another hour of Jimmy. And then the listener who thought bonus hour was an April Fool's joke, which I guess I can't blame you for. Well, if it is, I'm happy about it because I missed the first hour. I didn't hear anything about what you said about Fat Tay. I could say that. I don't have any bets. I've never said that on air, actually. I'm just reading what the listener texts in. Yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll cover that a bit. I'm sure Peter will talk about some other things like Trump and whatnot. Maybe I'll touch on that. Certainly welcome to call in 303-696-1971 on any of these topics that we've discussed in this show. But I do have a few more things that I want to cover in regards to tone deaf Tay Anderson. As I wrote yesterday in my column for the Denver Gazette, tone deaf Tay mocks school safety. I point out at the very end, in 2021, Tay Anderson's colleagues censured him on the school board in Denver for unbecoming behavior. Remember, it's not just what the media says. In article after article, they say, well, he flirted with a 16-year-old student, and so they censured him for that. No! There was a 16-year-old girl. There was a 17-year-old girl. He made them feel extraordinarily uncomfortable, particularly one student, as he coercively tried to date them, including trying to get a student to come over to his house. Or was it letting him go over there? I think actually it was. I can't remember which. Either way, it was wrong, and it was unacceptable. And there's so much more in the report, too. And one thing in there, he was intimidating online at least two instances of witness intimidation. So that's the unbecoming behavior. The media leaves most of that out. Oh, he just flirted with the 16-year-old student. Now, that's bad enough. I'm not saying that isn't. But they understate why he was censured and what that investigations law group, independent investigation of Denver Public Schools, found in 2021. But I digress, because nearly 2 years later, Tay Anderson has proven nothing has changed. Come November, voters ought to finally show Tay the doorway. Nice crescendo close there, I think, to the column and, of course, to the Jimmy Sangenberger show. Alexa here with a text for the win this morning. The biggest fool is a huge competition between Tay-Tay, Polis, Hancock, Griswold, and Kyle Clark. Yes, ain't that the truth? Although I'm glad Kyle at least said to Tay, at least said when Tay tried to compare attempted murder by a student to shoplifting, patting down a student every day for shoplifting like attempted murder, at least Kyle did call him out on it and say, I'm talking about attempted murder and you're talking about shoplifting. I mean, come on. All right. I got another hour up ahead filling in for Peter Boyles here before he makes it into the studio. So continue to tune in here with the bonus hour of Jimmy Sangenberger. Thanks for the April Fool's fun and being good sports, everybody. Looks like Peter's in here. Well, maybe we could do a quick crossover. He made it in time. We'll talk maybe next week. Have a great one. Jimmy Sangenberger here with you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.